The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime recently hosted a two-day meeting of its Synthetic Drug Strategy Expert Group. On last week's show, we heard two presentations to the group. The first, an overview of the synthetic drug situation from Angela May, chief of the Research and Trend Analysis Branch at UNODC. The second, a review of synthetic drugs, injection drug use, HIV, and prisons from Fariba Sultani, chief of the HIV-AIDS section at UNODC. This week, we're going to hear about drug market surveillance and early warning systems, and about prevention, treatment, and rehabilitation. Let's start with market surveillance and early warning systems. Here's Martin Reitelhuber, an illicit synthetic drugs expert at UNODC.
Introducing myself, I work with the Laboratory and Scientific Services here at UNODC as an international coordinator and illicit synthetic drugs expert. Angela explained it already in her presentation yesterday. Synthetic drugs bring differences, different challenges to the world of counter narcotics, drug policy, drug health related services, and also international collaboration. Some examples, what that means in reality. Xylazine, a toxic adulterant, was found in samples of heroin and fentanyl in some countries. There is also a large scale manufacture of ketamine, a substance not under international control, but used widely in East and Southeast Asia, but now more and more also in Latin America and in North America as well. There are forensic challenges that large amounts of synthetic drugs are seized. Angela showed the statistics yesterday. But for every ton of synthetic drug seized, there's a multiple of precursor chemicals used, which in many countries are also seized. So there are some countries sitting on hundreds or thousands of tons of seized chemicals, which need to be dealt with in some way. And these challenges can happen overnight. You know, one large shipment, containerized shipment of precursor chemicals meant for illicit manufacture can mean you're sitting on 100 tons of chemicals. And what do you do with them? So these are some of the challenges of today's world related to synthetic drugs. And it's not stopping. We heard a lot about the synthetic opioids, the fentanyl analogs and fentanyl itself, the problematic situation which arose through its spread, particularly in North America, but also a new type of synthetic opioids is emerging now in Europe, the nitazenes. It's a new group of synthetic opioids which are equally potent like fentanyl. These are some of these nitazenes which have emerged already and have been placed under international control. So this is a reality already. Now, this is why we all need early warning systems, that this information comes out as early as possible before it creates serious negative consequences in your countries. We here at UNODC, we have established a global mechanism to collect this data, but we rely very much on national mechanisms, on national laboratories generating this information. So essentially, it is you or your colleagues in your countries, in forensic laboratories, drug analysis laboratories, which are the first ones to generate this information. And our goal is to establish information flows that capture this information as soon as possible and make it available within your country, but also beyond your country, for example, at the regional level or eventually at a global level. Now, I'd like to highlight that all this starts usually in a drug analysis laboratory. They are just key to early warning on synthetic drugs. There are so many different synthetic drugs. There's so many precursors related to their illicit manufacture. Only drug analysis laboratories, well equipped, well trained, will be able to discover, to detect, identify these substances and make you aware of their presence in your country. This is why part of our work is to collaborate with these laboratories and strengthen their capabilities wherever needed. One example we are seeing here, for example, is from Indonesia, which have established a national early warning system building on their drug analysis laboratory. And they're regularly publishing information on newly identified substances in the country and make this available to other stakeholders in the government, but also to the general public. So everyone can be aware of what is out there and what is contained, for example, in these green tablets. In that case, it was a new psychoactive substances which had not been under national control at the point of detection, but of course the country then took action and placed the substance under national control. So this is a practical example of what a country can do with the early warning information. Make it available, of course, but then the idea is you have the early warning, you take action, whatever you determine to be the proper way to react. Here another example from Latin America, in this case from El Salvador. We've also collaborated with the country for many years to set up an early warning mechanism. They receive a regular flow of information from their drug analysis laboratories. They analyze this information, and when they see something unusual, something new, something worrying appearing on the market, like here, these little sachets with a rose-colored powder in an attractive packaging made to attract young people particularly, they decided to make this information available to the larger public through an early warning message. So in reality, this drug called 2C by its street name was actually ketamine mixed with MDMA, that is the substance usually contained in ecstasy tablets. Now, the combined effect of that could be stronger than taking the drugs separately, and users will not be aware of what is actually in this rose pink color, the powder, and the health consequences could be serious. So what a country does is also provide information what people can do, users, if they have consumed the substance and they're experiencing negative health consequences, who they can call, what they can do. Again, a recent example, we're also organizing an information exchange among the countries, among the laboratories in the region. We bring them together in webinars. So the Dominican Republic knew about this development in El Salvador. And when they discovered similar pink little sachets, they were already aware of what this was. And they also analyzed it, and they found the same combination of ketamine and MDMA. And they came out quickly with another alert because people, institutions, health providers, drug service providers were not yet aware of what was actually in this pink powder. So it is quite important that early warning systems, they issue informations, does not always have to be an alert, but information, messages, notifications to the stakeholders. We also try to do that at the regional level. I mentioned already the network of labs in Latin America, but we are also having many partner countries in Southeast Asia which receive quarterly information about emerging new psychoactive substances in the region. So every quarter we let them know what was discovered, what was new in this quarter, what is the first one ever discovered in the region. Now finally, what do we do with all this information? We capture it, we put it into a huge online database, our early warning advisory. Some of you might already use it. If not, please register as a user and you will be able to access all the rich content of over 1,200 different substances with a chemical description, scientific information for the analysis, information about their effects, etc. This is what you can do in the system. There are some dashboards which allow you to retrieve information very easily. Here we see a summary of all the data in the system, 1,232 different substances at this point. You can zoom in to just a particular year. There are other filters which allow you to zoom into your country, for example, to see what information we have on your country. So here are some examples for country-level information. So there are lots of options to get a better understanding of what's happening, not only in your country, but maybe in the region, in a neighboring country, because whatever happens there, you know, you might be next to be receiving, experiencing this development. An important part of this data collection is toxicology data. So we're not only working with seized material, information coming from drug seizures, but we are also capturing information coming from the post-mortem analysis, for example, and our drugs found in urine, blood, etc. Could also be post-mortem, could be clinical cases, could be emergency room cases, could be cases related to driving under the influence. This is an important information because it's a different side of the coin, a different reality. It's not a law enforcement side, it's the health side. Yeah. Now, these two sides do not match 100%, obviously, because there's always something which slips through the law enforcement but is on the market and has an effect on the market and is consumed. So it's quite important to have these two aspects, these two dimensions of information, and this helps us a lot to understand trends and how they reflect, how they play out on drug user markets. Based on all this, we're generating advice for the World Health Organization. We make it available to them every year for their own review of substances for international control. And you will be aware that every year the World Health Organization has recommended a number of new substances to be placed under international control, and they need the scientific evidence to justify this decision. And this scientific evidence, as I explained, always comes from the base level, and that is laboratories in your countries. Yeah. But it's important to have the mechanisms to dig out this information and make it available up to that level so that countries here in the Commission in March can make a well-informed decision.
That was Martin Reidelhuber, an illicit synthetic drugs expert at UNODC, speaking January 31st at the third meeting of the Synthetic Drug Strategy Expert Group. Tatiana Yell is a drug policy officer in the Drugs Laboratory and Scientific Services Branch at UNODC.
There has certainly been a lot of progress made, and many countries, as Martin highlighted, present in this room, have already established early warning systems in their countries. Now, what the question is, as kind of the next step, is to what extent are government responses that are in place linked to the early warning system data? And even more so, does early warning prepare governments to formulate preventive or effective prevention policies and tactics to avoid a crisis before it actually happens? Early warning does go beyond the data collection monitoring of new emerging threats and can certainly play a vital role in drug policy making. The data that enters early warning should be seen as a signal to governments, and a signal that allows governments to anticipate, and with sufficient information, it can predict new threats with enough time for implementation of science-informed prevention and mitigation measures. The system does not only support early detection of new substances, it also helps to disseminate information on new drugs, new drug use patterns, or the use of pharmaceuticals with known effects in the manufacture of synthetic drugs. It is certainly an evidence-based system that relies on having reliable scientific information that reflects current situation happening directly on the ground. Now, there are several factors that can ensure that information from early warning translates into effective policy. First, early warning system provides the evidence. Now, in order for that evidence to be accurate, complete, and precise, it requires adequate capacity of forensic drug testing and toxicology laboratories to be able to identify synthetic drugs, including MPS, and it requires building strategic partnerships with forensics and various scientific associations or academic institutions. Investing in building and enhancing this technical expertise of relevant stakeholders allows countries to detect problems earlier and to be better prepared to identify the threats. It also then enables policymakers to formulate interventions and solutions on the basis of, again, accurate, precise, and complete data, scientific evidence, and knowledge. Secondly, to translate early warning into effective policy, it needs to be integrated into a wider national drug policy response system. If part of a multidisciplinary network, national institutions and key actors in the field of drugs, that includes forensic personnel, law enforcement officers, first responders, and healthcare professionals, they're able to exchange information and keep decision makers apprised of any shifts in trends and early detections in emerging drugs that pose a potential threat to public health. Early warning system plays a vital role not only at national level, but it provides a crucial tool for regional cooperation and international policymaking. As we know, no region has been immune to the problem, and no country has been spared the detrimental effects illicit substances have had on our society. And that brings me to my final point, and that's the importance of cooperation and information sharing at all levels to increase knowledge of synthetic drugs and drug markets and cooperate among all stakeholders. That's through national mechanisms, through regional networks, and at international level, including through the CND. National early warning systems contribute to regional platforms, and strengthening regional coordination and collaboration around early warning contributes to the information and scientific knowledge sharing, and it increases the preparedness of countries within a specific region to formulate policies and responses collectively. At international level, policy decisions that are informed by science and data are vital to formulating effective responses and designing predictive models for emerging synthetic drug threats. Timely identification of substances is critical, and sharing of information through the UNODC Early Warning Advisory allows us here at UNODC and our partner agencies to keep abreast of new developments and adapt our strategies to serve EU member states in facing these threats. Now, while the ultimate goal of early warning system is to provide rapid information that can result in immediate responses to reduce risk to public health, the database behind early warning represents a source of sometimes over a decade of data entries and trends that could be used to look back, to link data to policy decisions that were made in the past, and evaluate responses taken with a view to increase effectiveness in the future. UNODC is exploring at the moment ways to take this initiative further and looks forward to working with interested governments in this regard. To conclude, early warning system is an example of multidisciplinary collaboration, using technologies and technical expertise to identify, monitor, and follow up on emerging synthetic drug trends in a particular location and time, and contributing to translation of science into policy and science into practice. As such, it provides basis for informed decision and policy making by national, regional, and international actors responding to and predicting emerging synthetic drug threats. Thank you.
That was Tatiana Yell, a drug policy officer in the Drugs Laboratory and Scientific Services Branch at UNODC, speaking January 31st at the third meeting of the Synthetic Drug Strategy Expert Group. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Staying with that Synthetic Drug Strategy Expert Group meeting, let's go to the fourth meeting, which was held the afternoon of January 31st and focused on health outcomes. One of the presenters for that meeting was Giovanna Campello, chief of the Prevention, Treatment, and Rehabilitation section at UNODC.
Let's start from prevention. And for us, why this is important is I'm struck by Justice's words about the case that he reported, and many of us know of similar tragic cases in which people have lost their lives, sometimes very young people, to overdose, particularly opioid overdose. And all our responses are geared to help with this crisis. What I want to make sure is that there is a long-term view there, that we are not only stopping at the immediate actions that are absolutely necessary to stop the crisis, but also that we take those measures, like preventing drug use in the first place, to ensure that the crisis does not perpetuate itself. So Justice was mentioning evidence-based practice, and this is the basis of our practice. The standards that we have published with WHO are a summary of what works and what doesn't work in science. And in general, we work with countries all around the world, 20 countries annually, to show that evidence-based prevention is feasible, is possible, and it is effective. We do a lot of work on evaluating our programs, showing that they work, that children are better as a result of our programs. And the programs we mostly use, you see them on the slides, are, we have two family-based programs, a program for school and a new program that we are developing to build on youth participation. So it's a peer-to-peer program based on life skills as well. But the science tells us also something else, and that is that prevention, evidence-based prevention programs are good, but the prevention system is better. And this is what you see on the graph. So if you see the top line is how prevalence of the non-medical use of opioid, prescription opioids, so very relevant to this Congress, how it goes up between the ages of 12 and 18. If nothing happens. In the orange line, you have a group that has been participating in an evidence-based school program. So already you see that the line goes up slower. But look at the lower line in blue, and you can see a group that was exposed not only to a school-based program, but also to a program with the families of the children. And again, the prevalence goes up much lower as well. So we are, why will we continue to, you know, work with member states all around the world to with our program? We have also thought it is time to change our approach and move from doing one program here, one program there, and really amplify and create a system. And so that's we have recently launched, and we are building CHAMPS, Children Amplified Prevention Services. And this is an initiative when we want to move away from this piecemeal approach and go to a few countries and really turn around that prevention system and make sure that children are supported in their healthy and safe development from birth to adolescence. And this is really much in this infancy. We are foreseeing many waves, but for each wave, we are looking at 5 years. You remember here, it took a while for the prevention results to show up. So that's why we want to work in the middle term. And we will want to move in many waves. But for the first wave, we are looking at 10 countries and reaching 10 million children. So I hope you are as excited as we are in this new approach that I hope will help us prevent drug use, including, of course, the use of synthetic drugs much more effectively than ever before. What about people who use synthetic drugs, who have a drug use disorder due to synthetic drugs. They need care. This is this is clear. And again, we have our summary of science, is the international standards for treatment of drug use disorder, and it's written treatment, but really what we are talking about are all of those services that are needed to protect and promote the health of people who use drugs and people with drug use disorder. And this, of course, includes some interventions that in some countries call harm reduction, but they are all part of that same package. And at the same time, also those interventions that are needed if people so wish to support people in their recovery. We disseminate the standards, promoting an approach based on public health in 30 countries annually. And here, and this is an approach that, according to science, decreases drug use and HIV/AIDS, but Fariba will tell you more about this, but above all, decreases overdoses, including, of course, opioid overdoses. And we have many packages. You see them on the slide, on quality, on working with women, including pregnant women, as we were mentioning before, but also working with adolescents with drug use disorder, making sure that people are offered alternatives to incarceration and punishment, especially services, and if they are in prisons, that they actually receive good services. And also we work in humanitarian settings. But what you don't see here are two initiatives that I particularly want to highlight for you, because I think they are particularly relevant to the issue of synthetic drugs. The first one is our initiative that is called SOS, Stop Overdose Safely. In this initiative, we have had the honor to work in Ukraine and three countries of Central Asia, and Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan. But the great thing is that we trained and we equipped with naloxone all people that were likely to witness an overdose. This means, of course, police, but this also means first responders. This means families. This means peers. And we could demonstrate that 90% of these people were, when faced with an overdose, used the naloxone correctly, so potentially saving lives. But the greatest thing, thinking about stigma also, is that this was maybe the first time or a unique time in which people that sometimes feel like they are on a different side of a barrier or maybe in conflict, were all in the same room for a common goal, which was to take care of the health of people who use drugs. And the beautiful quote that you see, on the slide, is from an SOS participant and really reminds us of that human touch, human dimension, and really the transformative power of treating people with respect and without stigma and discrimination.
That was Giovanna Campello, Chief of the Prevention, Treatment, and Rehabilitation Section at UNODC, speaking January 31st at the fourth meeting of the Synthetic Drug Strategy Expert Group. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's audio port service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Find this edition of Century, along with an archive of past shows, at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. You'll find a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.